Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 51. I'm recording it on Monday, December 1st, 2008. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Retirement Planning Has Become a Sick Joke. There's a phrase in an Elvis Costello song. I used to be disgusted, now I try to be amused. And that's a phrase that I have called to mind many times during the first 6.5 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. This podcast is about safe withdrawal rates and where the quote-unquote experts stand today on retirement planning. Safe withdrawal rate analysis is used for retirement planning. It's the bedrock of the conventional advice on retirement planning. The history here is that I happen to be the person who discovered that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are analytically invalid. I discovered this while putting together my own retirement plan back in the mid-1990s. I committed the horrible crime of telling people what I discovered on a Motley Fool discussion board back in May of 2002. And all heck broke loose as a result. And we've been having discussions in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities for 6.5 years now, exploring the implications of what I learned back in the mid-1990s. We've had hundreds of people in these communities make very valuable contributions to our learning, and as a result, we've been able to learn all sorts of wonderful things, both about retirement planning and about how stock investing works in general. So the Great Debate has been a wonderful experience. I think it's the most important series of discussions ever held on the internet. We've also had lots of ugly stuff, lots of abusive posting by those who are trying to quote-unquote defend the old-school safe withdrawal rate studies, the safe withdrawal rate studies that say you don't need to take valuations into account when putting together your retirement plan, and the passive investing model for understanding how stock investing works that is really responsible for the errors in the old-school studies. All that the old-school studies really are passive investing as applied to retirement planning. That's all they are. Passive investing says you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices reach insanely dangerous levels, and implicit in that claim is a claim that valuations don't really matter, that stocks offer a good value proposition at all times, not just at times when prices are reasonable or low, but even at times when prices are insanely dangerous, and that's simply not true. Stocks offer a very strong value proposition when prices are low. They offer a very strong proposition when prices are moderate. And they offer a horrible long-term value proposition when prices are insanely dangerous. Just as you would expect, nothing here that should be shocking or controversial or hard to understand or anything along those lines. But yet it is taken that way. Certainly, you know, my claim that we should use the same powers of human reason in the investing field that we apply to all other areas of life endeavor has been met with much opposition. It is considered quote unquote controversial. People think I'm mean that I report what the historical data says about how stock investing works. Rob, you are so mean. All of these experts have been telling us that valuations don't matter, and you're pointing out that the historical data shows that it always has. Rob, don't be so mean. Well, I'm going to continue to be mean about the realities of stock investing, because I believe that's my job. I'm not an investing expert. You know, I haven't passed any tests. I don't have any, I haven't managed any big funds. I'm a journalist. I report things. I view the world. I see what's going on. I tell people, report the story to people. And the story in stock investing today is that there once was a time when the academic research indicated that the market was efficient, and that led to the development of the passive investing model. That was all a good development. Then in the 1980s, the academic research discovered some new things. It discovered that, no, we were wrong in thinking the market was efficient. We were wrong in thinking that passive investing might work in the real world. In reality, valuations really do affect long-term returns. We got it wrong. And we now live in a twilight zone where the experts are afraid to report these realities. Perhaps, I think there's a good bit of evidence that they are actually so shocked by the realities that they can't even let them in themselves. They can't even acknowledge to themselves that they got it wrong back in the 1960s and the 1970s and the early 1980s when we were developing the passive investing model. So as a result, few people know about the most important investing realities. There's a group of experts that know, let's say 10% of the population of investing experts, Robert Shiller and Cliff S. Ness and Rob Arnott and Ed Easterling and John Walter Russell and Andrew Smithers and so forth. But most of the big names are largely in the dark, at least partially in the dark, and most of the investing advice you have heard for the past 20, 30 years is wrongheaded. And of course, we've now seen what happens when you follow wrongheaded investing advice. We've suffered the passive investing stock crash of 2008. We're living through today the greatest loss in middle class wealth in the history of the United States, all because of this mistake we made. And I am a reporter, and I try to point it out to people. I try to get us back on the right track. And while I am often pleased when I see very positive, healthy responses, I am also discouraged and saddened when I see negative responses. And so today's podcast is it's about retirement planning. And retirement planning has become a sick joke. And I say it's become a sick joke because we learned these things so long ago. We learned them in the Retire Early community back in May of 2002, which is 6.5 years ago. There's evidence that there were investing experts who knew some of these things I am reporting, that I've been reporting for 6.5 years, even before I came on the scene. Robert Shiller was doing research showing that valuations affect long-term returns going all the way back to the early 1980s. So I happened to discover what others had learned and what was not reported. And I was as your typical middle-class investor, I was shocked to learn that nobody had told me these things. You know, why hadn't anyone told me? And so I discussed it in my discussion board communities, and we developed insights, and we've eventually developed the calculators that you know are at my website and at John Walter Russell's website, and we just keep moving forward. But every now and then, you just have to stop and say, "Do the words that I see here on the page do they really exist? Is this really what's happening?" Here's the thing. Here's the thing that sort of set me off on this particular rant. I sent an email to... I've been having conversations with Michael Kitsis. And Michael is a financial planner. I believe he's based in Maryland. Michael's a great guy. He's helped us a lot. He's written some fantastic emails. I hope you will read his stuff at my website. I report on his emails at the blog, the A Rich Life blog. So, definitely read Michael's stuff. But Michael recently spoke to a conference on safe withdrawal rates. And I'm not going to go through all of what we learned on safe withdrawal rates. You'll need to look, there's lots of articles at the site about that. There's earlier podcasts. But the basic concept is the old retirement planning advice, the retirement planning advice that has failed, ignores valuations. It tells you when you set up a retirement plan, you can decide on a withdrawal rate, and just there's only one withdrawal rate you need to know about, 4%. 4% works at times of low valuations, moderate valuations, high valuations. All of that is wrong. 4% works at some valuation levels and not at others. The safe withdrawal rate is not a constant number. It's always changing as valuation levels change. And so if you want to know how it really works, you know, back here on planet Earth, not this imaginary planet dreamed up by the passive investing enthusiast, if you want to know how it works on planet Earth, go to PassionSaving.com and look at the Retirement Risk Evaluator. That's a calculator, a safe withdrawal rate calculator that takes valuations into account. And the person who you should give primary credit to for development of that calculator is John Walter Russell. He's a man I met at the Motley Fool discussion board, and John has done the statistical work in the development of these calculators, and John has done all the research that is the engine for all the work that I do in the investing field. John's website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. Well, out of my discussions with, so I'm not going to go through all of that. You'll need to, you know, if you're not up to speed on the problems with the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, please check out some other articles. But basically, in order to get it right, you need to include valuations. You need to adjust the safe withdrawal rate. Otherwise, your retirement plan is not likely to work. And people who have used the old school studies are likely to suffer busted retirements in days ahead. We are likely to see millions of busted retirements because of these demonstrably false claims. And all of that is bad enough, but the mistake that was made is actually small potatoes compared to the much bigger story. That's the tip of the iceberg. The really big story is that we have not been able to bring ourselves to acknowledge the mistake after it was brought to light. And so this just continues. Year after year, decade after decade, we continue to give people horribly flawed retirement planning advice, and we cause more busted retirements. And we fail to warn the people who followed the old school studies and whose retirements are likely to fail. This just goes on and on and on. That's why, you know, when I was coming up with the title for this podcast, I just said retirement planning has become a sick joke. We are not serious people. We are not serious people. When I say we, I'm speaking of humans. When it comes to the subject of investing, we are today incapable of discussing the issue in serious ways. I can discuss it in serious ways on my website, but if I go to the Motley Fool discussion board, no, it will be banned. Honest posting on what the historical data says has been banned there. It's been banned at Morningstar.com. It's been banned at the Early Retirement Forum. We cannot today discuss investing in serious ways. That's why we've suffered these huge financial losses. Because the first step to knowing what you're doing is to get the ABCs right. And we got the ABCs wrong. And it is a bit of a maddening experience to see this play out, to see a train wreck play out in front of you, and to try to help people, you know, and to even to connect with many, many, many people who get it, who understand that, yes, valuations do need to count, it do need to be considered, and then to find that the experts, the people who are paid to understand this stuff, and paid big salaries in many cases, are not willing to check out what we've learned in a serious way. And that it's not just one. It's not as if you can point, you know, and say, oh, this is a bad guy. You know, I'm going to be talking today about Bill Bangin, who's a financial planner out in California. He's one of the old school safe withdrawal rate researchers. Bill Bangin is not a bad guy. I see no evidence of it. He was kind enough. I sent him an email. He was kind enough to respond. He's perfectly polite in his responses. Bill Bangin is struggling to understand this stuff along with all the rest of us. He's no more a bad guy than Michael Kitsis was before him, or Bill Bernstein, or Scott Burns, or John Bogle, or any of the others. But I think it would be fair to say that the retirement planning advice that Bill Bangin is giving, does not measure up, in Rob Bennett's opinion. I'll say that, and I'll try to explain why. And please form your own decisions. Bill Bangin is the expert. If you want to go with the expert, go with what he says, not Rob Bennett. But I cannot make sense of what he says. That's It's my job to tell you that, and I mean no unkindness, but to Bill. But I have to say it, and I'll try to make my case, and then you decide where to go with it. I'll be running. So Michael had dinner with Bill Bangin. Michael Kitsis had dinner with Bill Bangin at a recent conference on safe withdrawal rates at Hershey, Pennsylvania. And I asked Michael what went on, and Michael responded to some other questions, but he did not respond to about Bill Bangin's position. And so I went ahead and sent Bill himself an email. And I'm going to be posting Bill's email at the blog on Tuesday, December 2nd. Today is Monday, December 1st. And then I'll be posting Bill's response on Thursday, December 4th. So by the time you hear this podcast, this will all be out in the public. So I wrote to Bill, and you know, I said there recently was an article at Bloomberg.com that quoted Bill. And it said that Bill has told his clients to get out of stocks. And this was shocking to some people, some of the passive investing enthusiasts at Bogleheads.org, because the safe withdrawal rate concept requires that the investor remain in stocks when prices fall. This is key. None of it works if you're not a buy and hold investor. And Bill Bangin is refuting buy and hold. He's not saying that he no longer believes in buy and hold, but his actions are refuting it. He is not following the buy and hold strategy as it has been described to us. So this is shocking. And so I wrote to Bill asking him, you know, what the story was. Was he quoted accurately? You know, does he really believe the best thing is to go to a zero stock allocation today? If he really believes that's the best thing, how is he going to know when to get back into stocks? Those sorts of questions. And I asked him these questions, and here is his response. I'm going to read the entire response because it's not long. Dear Rob, this is Bill Bangin, financial planner in California. A prominent old-school safe withdrawal rate researcher. His studies are quoted all the time in the press. Dear Rob, I actually have been using in my practice results Michael Kitsis published recently, which relate withdrawal rates to the 10-year trailing S&P 500 index price earnings ratio. It fills a gap in my methods and makes a lot of sense. I always knew that starting valuations would affect initial withdrawal rates. But since 1994, when my first research was published, there was virtually no opportunity to utilize the concept, as the markets have been overvalued until very recently. Now, however, retirees will have the opportunity to employ much fuller withdrawal rates than was recently possible, possibly as high as 9% to 10%, depending on how severe a decline the stock market experiences. I am not using market timing, as my decision to retreat to cash has little to do with any market indicators. Likewise, my re-entry to the market will not be conditioned on any indicators. I am totally unable to call market bottoms, so I don't even try. I sold all client equities because I perceived an unusually high degree of risk in the economy and the financial system. I was unable to assess the degree of risk. If one can't assess risk, one can't manage it. I believe that those who are investing in equities now or remain invested in them are in possession of securities whose future earning power is completely unpredictable owing to changes in American consumer behavior and the effects of breakdowns in the credit and housing markets. We are entering a completely new world of finance, and I haven't a clue yet where it will take us. I am waiting to attain a better understanding of likely outcomes before I dip my toe in the water again. I may miss quite a bit of a new bull market, but I miss two-thirds of the bear market, or more possibly, so I can afford to be patient. I will check out the Retirement Risk Evaluator when I get a chance. Thanks for bringing it to my attention. Thanks for your kind words. Bill Bangin. All right. I did not respond in any significant way to this email. I wrote a very brief email back, which I just said, you know, thanks for your response, and I asked that Bill verify that it was okay that I use his response at my blog, that I would like to publish the response. And he said, fine. He came back and said, that's fine. I did not respond. I'm responding here, but not to Bill. I'm responding, you know, I'm telling you what I think of these comments. Ordinarily, I would respond to Bill, but I just feel that we are on such different tracks in our thinking today that I don't think it would be helpful. I don't think that we could have a fruitful exchange. I hope that that changes. I hope that in days to come, you know, months to come or years to come, Bill will sort of take a look around and maybe develop an interest in the New School research, and we could have a good discussion back and forth. And I could answer any questions he has, and hopefully he would answer questions I had, and the two of us could learn together. This is always what I push in all of my writings and all of my podcasts, that investing, we all learn about investing together, because I believe many people have different perspectives, and it's only by sharing those perspectives that we can come to the truth, with a capital T, of how investing works. But one has to choose one's battle, so to speak, and there's not enough common ground here at this time, I don't believe, for Bill Bangin and I to really make much progress together. So I think we need to just hold off a bit. But I am grateful for him responding, because there was a mystery about whether he's supporting market timing or not. My conclusion is he is supporting market timing. He says I am not. So I will give my characterizations, but please do. The reason I wanted to read Bill's words is I want you to know what he says. I don't want you to hear just what Rob Bennett says about what he says. I want you to know what he says, because that's the fair way to proceed. And please don't think, if I am critical, please don't think that I am trying to single Bill Bangin out and say, you know, Bill Bangin is wrong, Bill Bangin is bad, you know. The response he is giving is consistent with responses I have seen from many other experts and many non-experts in the investing field. And I find it shocking, because I'm coming from a very different place. I'm coming as a believer in the rational investing school, which many of the things Bill is saying just are counter to what I believe. And I need to explain that. That's my job. But there's nothing he is saying that is too shocking, given the passive investing framework from which he is working. Okay? So please understand that as a preface. Now, I'll go through the comments and try to make sense out of them from a rational investing perspective. Bill says he is using Michael Kitsy's study. Michael did a study, and Michael's study is halfway between the old school and the new school. The difference is the old school studies, which are the studies you read in all retirement planning advice today, virtually all retirement planning advice, the old school studies say that the safe withdrawal rate is always the same number. It's always 4%. The root premise there is that stocks always offer a good long-term value proposition. That's passive investing. That's all it is. I say it's nonsense, but that's the theory. You can't time the market. You know, if you can't time the market, the safe withdrawal rate's always the same. You know, one follows from the other. If you can't time the market, valuations don't matter. Stocks offer good long-term value proposition regardless of whether valuations are low, moderate, high, insanely high. Makes no difference. You should always be in stocks. You should always go with the same allocation. That's the mindset that is being evidenced in the old school studies, and of course, Bill Bangin suffers from that mindset, in Rob Bennett's opinion. Now, Michael Kitsis did something important. What he did was he said, well, he didn't reject the old school studies. He didn't say they are analytically invalid, as I do. But Michael went halfway between the old school approach and the new school. Michael said, the safe withdrawal rate is not always the same number. It's not always 4%. It can go higher than 4% when valuations drop to very low levels. And that's true. Michael's absolutely correct on that point. And if you look at the Retirement Risk Evaluator, the calculator at my website, you will see that indeed the safe withdrawal rate can go as high as 9%, certainly not limited to 4%. But the other, what Michael misses is, Michael says it can never go below 4%. In other words, it can go higher, but it can never go below. Michael looks at that, looks at the effect of valuations in only one direction. If you don't count valuations at all, the answer you come up with is the old school studies, that the number is always 4%. But Michael says, no, it can go higher when valuations are low. I say, yes, it can go higher when valuations are low. It can also go lower when valuations are high. So while the safe withdrawal rate can rise to as high as 9%, it can also drop to as low as 2%. But Michael does not agree. And Bill Bengen obviously does not agree. So Bill is saying, he's saying that he's going to use Michael's study, and he's saying it makes a lot of sense, and he's saying that he always knew that starting valuations affected initial withdrawal rates. I sure wish that had been publicized. It seems to me it would have saved us all an awful lot of trouble if the researchers who developed these old school studies have known all along that starting valuations affect the safe withdrawal rate. If they had only let us know that, we could have saved ourselves an awful lot of trouble. But he says he always knew this, and he says, while he knew that this was so, there was virtually no opportunity to utilize the concept. Well, that is certainly true. Valuations were at insanely high levels from 1995 through the first part of 2008. So there has never been a time during all of that time, from 1995 through the first part of 2008, the safe withdrawal rate was never as high as 4%. It's higher than that today. The last time I checked, it was 5%. So the safe withdrawal rate is higher than the old school studies tell us today, at today's valuations. But from 1995 through to the first part of 2008, it was lower. At the low point, it was below 2%. So Bengen is quite correct that there was no opportunity to utilize a withdrawal rate of higher than 4%. In fact, 4% was extremely risky at the top of the bubble when Bengen's research was showing that the safe withdrawal rate was 4%. The safe withdrawal rate, when calculated using an analytically valid methodology, was under 2%. It was not 4%. Those are the people I'm concerned about. Those are the people who will be suffering busted retirements in the future, in the event that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they have always performed in the past. So he says, now, however, retirees will have the opportunity to employ much fuller withdrawal rates, possibly as high as 9% to 10%, depending on how severe a decline the stock market experiences. That's true. That's true. We're not there yet. As I say, today the safe withdrawal rate's around 5%, but it is entirely possible we'll be seeing another 50% drop in stock prices, and that would indeed bring the safe withdrawal rate up to around 9%. So Bengen's making an important point there. He should be given credit for that point. I think that's a very important point. What I regret, though, is the point considered in isolation is valuable. But I sure wish people had known this back in January of 2000. See, there's more than one problem with getting the safe withdrawal rate wrong. The thing that I usually focus on is that the fact that we were told the wrong safe withdrawal rate in those years meant that many people put retirement plans together that have almost no chance of surviving. The odds of a retirement plan that went with a high stock allocation and that used a 4% withdrawal, the odds of that plan surviving if that retirement began in January of 2008, that was the top of the bubble, the odds of that retirement plan lasting 30 years are only 30%. That retirement has only a 1 in 3 chance of succeeding. In other words, it has a 2 in 3 chance of going bust. That's what I usually focus on when I'm pointing out the flaws in the old school studies. But there's a second major flaw. There are many flaws, actually, but there's a second major flaw. And the second major flaw is it's not just that people are going to see their retirements fail. That's obviously a bad thing. What makes it so painful, what makes these errors in the old school studies so horrible to contemplate, is that the solution available to people was so obvious and so easy to access. Those people didn't have to experience busted retirements. All they had to do was to lower their stock allocations, and then increase them again when stocks were again being sold at reasonable price at price levels. So say that you were putting together a retirement plan in January of 2000, and you're saying, "What should I do?" And you read the old school study, and it says 4% withdrawal is 100% safe if you have a high stock allocation. That's what the Graney study says. That's the one that we examined in depth at the Retire Early boards. The Graney study says that retirement is 100% safe. The reality is that it's 30% safe, going by the historical data using an analytically valid methodology. So it has a 1 in 3 chance of surviving. Some might say, nobody can retire then, Rob. It's all hopeless. You know, if the withdrawal rate is 2%, who can ever say? And I've had people tell me this. I had people on discussion boards say just this. Rob, you're telling us Rob, you're being so mean. You're telling us the withdrawal rate is 2%. That means we'd have to save 50 times the amount that we want to live on each year in order to retire. Rob, nobody can retire early using that rule. That's too depressing. That's too depressing, Rob. Please. And I had people say that. We have entire threads at the Motley Fool board where people say, Rob's advice is just too depressing to allow it to be discussed. He must be banned. He must be removed. Now, the reality is there was never a time when you had to save 50% of what you want to live on each year. When the withdrawal rate for a high stock allocation was 2%, the withdrawal rate for somebody going with Treasury inflation-protected securities, an asset class with a government guarantee attached to it, the safest asset class imaginable, the withdrawal rate for that asset class was close to 6% at that time. TIPS at one time were offering a guaranteed real return of 4.1% annual. And that translates into a safe withdrawal rate of about 5.8%, almost 6%. So at the low point, the withdrawal rate, the safe withdrawal rate for stocks was only 1.6%. So the safe withdrawal rate for TIPS was three times the safe withdrawal rate for stocks. Three times. So you could have retired years earlier than what you would have to do if you had followed passive investing and just stuck with the same stock allocation. The rational thing to do was lower your stock allocation dramatically back in January of 2000. Perhaps drop to a stock allocation of around 20%. And you can plug this into the retirement risk evaluator and see how it would work. And then some people would say, oh, no, we can't do that, Rob, because if we retire... we might live 30 years in retirement. If you retire at age 65 and you live to 95, that's 30 years. Or if you retire at age 60 and live to 90, that's 30 years. Are we going to give up the benefits of stock investing for 30 years? Is that really what you recommend? No, I don't recommend that at all. No way, shape, or form do I recommend such a thing. The thing to do wasn't to move out of stocks permanently. Those aren't the only choices. To be in stocks at all times, even insanely high price levels, or to get out of stocks 100%, are those our only options? No. The thing to do was to lower your stock allocation until prices were reasonable again. Yes, you don't want to be going with 80% stocks or 70% stocks or even 60% stocks when prices are insane, as they were from 1995 through the first part of 2008. But why not lower your stock allocation to 20% while prices are insane? And then, when prices return to reasonable levels, as they are now, increase your stock allocation again. maybe to 50%, maybe to 60%. Maybe if you're daring, to 80%. You know, different people are in different circumstances. Different people have different amounts of assets saved, and the same stock allocation doesn't apply for everyone. But no one should be following the same stock allocation at all times. No one. That's passive investing. That's emotional investing. That I reject. I advocate rational investing, changing your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. And so what I feel Bill Bengen is missing out here when he says, I always knew that valuations affected the safe withdrawal rate, but I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he basically said he didn't bother to tell us. I mean, he says, his exact words are, there was virtually no opportunity to utilize the concept. Those are Bill Bengen's words, not Rob Bennett's words. There was all the opportunity, from the standpoint of a rational investor, there was all the opportunity in the world to utilize the concept that valuations affect long-term returns. The way to utilize it was to tell people to lower their stock allocation until prices return to reasonable levels. That way, your safe withdrawal rate at the time you retired would have been much higher than the 2% that applied for stock investors. As I say, you could have gotten it up close to 6%. To get 5.8, you would have had to have gone with a 100% TIPS allocation. So I don't necessarily recommend that. I think a more moderate approach would have been, a more emotionally balanced approach would be to go maybe with 20% stocks or 30% stocks and 70 or 80% tips. And I don't know the number off the top of my head what your safe withdrawal rate would have been, but it obviously would have been a lot higher than 2%. It would have been a lot higher than 4%. It would have been something less than 5.8, but something in excess of 5%. So you would have had a good safe withdrawal rate at the time of your retirement. And now, when stocks are at reasonable price levels again, guess what? You change your allocation again, but in the opposite direction. Because now, the higher safe withdrawal rate is with stocks. Or at least we're getting there. We are now at a point where the safe withdrawal rate for an 80% stock portfolio is 5%. So you don't need to stay at 80% tips today, if that's what you went to, in order to keep your retirement plan safe back in 2000, you can now shift back to a moderate or even a high stock allocation. And if the safe withdrawal rate for stocks continues to increase, as Bill Bengen suggests it may, and he's quite right, we may get to a point where the safe withdrawal rate for stocks is 9%. Well, if we, you know, that would be another 50% price drop from here. Well, if we have a 50% price drop, by all means, move your stock allocation even higher. Then you might want to go with an 80% stock allocation. When the safe withdrawal rate for stocks is 9%, why not? Why not? 9% beats it beats that 5.8% you were getting with tips. So by all means. But the point I'm making here is Bill Bengen is a smart man. Okay? You couldn't develop one of these old school safe withdrawal rate studies without having a good bit of intelligence at work. So I know that he's a smart man. He's responded in a polite, kind way to my email. He's willing, he's trying to be helpful. So, you know, let's give him credit for that. Let's applaud him for that. But it shocks and astounds and amazes me that he is not able to put two and two together, that he doesn't seem able to grasp it, that if the safe withdrawal rate changes from 2% to 9%, you don't want to be going with the same stock allocation at all times. If the safe withdrawal rate is changing that dramatically, you've got to change your stock allocation when the long-term value proposition of stocks changes that dramatically. And the only explanation that I can offer for why Bill is not able to see this is that Bill believes in passive investing. And the first premise of passive investing is that you don't change your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes. So that idea, it's somehow like, it's like there's a block in his head that says, that idea can't come in. That idea shall never enter my thinking. And again, I'm not, you know, I'm talking about Bill Bengen here. I'm trying to illustrate a point. It's not just Bill Bengen that's making this mistake. This mistake is being made by thousands of financial planners all over the United States, all over the world, I presume. I'm not familiar with outside of the United States, but it's a disaster. Retirement planning has become a sick joke when retirement planners aren't able to grasp that people planning retirements need to change their stock allocations in response to changes in the long-term value proposition for stocks. Come on, people. Let's get with the program here. We are hurting people with this advice. Now, I'll go on to the second paragraph. He says, I am not using market timing. Well, I say he is. He says he isn't. You decide who you want to believe. Bill Bengen has changed. He's recommended that his clients change their stock allocations. Isn't that market timing? Isn't that what the word means? To time the market is to change your stock allocation? The thing that passive investors have been telling us is not to change our stock allocations? They've been saying market timing doesn't work. Well, Bill Bengen thinks it works, or he wouldn't be doing it. Now, he gives an explanation. He's responding to my charge here. He's saying, I am not using market timing as my decision to retreat to cash had little to do with any market indicators. Well, what did they have to do with then? What's he mean by market indicators? It seems to me he's changing. What other explanation is there for the fact that he's changed his allocation except that stocks are crashing, prices are crashing? That's why he changed. Isn't that a market indicator, a crash in stock prices? Isn't that a market indicator? What is it? And the very terminology used is revealing. My decision to, quote, retreat to cash. Do you see how... This is, I point this stuff out when I see it, because people reveal where they're coming from with the language they use. I have an article on cash at my site. It's really on I-bonds and tips, not money markets. But, tips and I-bonds are a form of super cash. You know, they're better than cash. And I have an article, one of the chapters of the book I'm writing is called I Get a Kick Out of Cash. You know, and one of the articles is cash isn't just for sissies anymore. One of the articles at the website. It's in the valuation informed indexing section. You know, cash isn't just for sissies anymore. You don't retreat to cash. It's not you retreat when you fail at something. The suggestion here is there's some sort of retreating going on. Why do we have to use words like retreat? Why not just say, my decision to invest rationally and move my money out of stocks until prices return to normal levels, you know, why not say it that way, which is a positive spin, instead of saying, I retreat it to cash. That's the passive investing mindset. That's how we turn our minds off to the realities of stock investing. Thinking. That cash is a retreat of some sort. That there's something bad about cash, something yucky about cash. That cash isn't risky enough. You know, what the passive investors will tell you is, oh, you're only compensated for taking on risk. If you're in cash, you won't be compensated. Cash is yucky. It's not risky enough. You're not a man if you're not in cash. Well, I don't want to be a man at a time when the most likely return on stocks is a negative number. That's where we were in January of 2000. The most likely 10-year return on stocks was a negative number. I don't want to be a man if being a man means I've got to invest in something providing a negative return. So Bengen says he's not engaged in market timing. I say he is. He says, likewise, my re-entry to the market will not be conditioned on any indicators. Well, what will it be conditioned on then? I asked them, this is my question. How are you going to know when to get back in to stocks? I don't feel he answers that question. He he approaches it. He walks around it, but he doesn't really meet it head on. He says, I am totally unable to call market bottom, so I don't even try. Well, that I can go along with. I can't tell market bottom, so I don't try. I agree with that comment. I sold all client equities because I perceived an unusually high degree of risk in the economy and the financial system. Well, okay, there's a lot of risk in the financial system today, that's fair to say. But wasn't that risk, the real risk was present when prices were twice the levels they are today. If there's risk today when we're at a P10 level of 14, I hate to think what the risk was when we were at a P10 level of 44. When were stocks more risky, in January of 2000 or today? January 2000, they had a long, long, long ways to fall. Today, they may still fall another 50%. But they're not going to fall as far as they fell in January of 2000 going forward. The risk is greatly diminished today from what it was even a year ago. The risk is greatly diminished today from what it was even a year ago. So I don't understand this comment. It seems to me he lowered his allocation after the risk began to drop. Instead of lowering his allocation when the risk was sky high, he waited until there were significant losses, and then he lowered his allocation. So how's he going to know when to get back in? When is this risk going to disappear? How's he going to know if he doesn't look at PE10 as his guide? If he looks at PE10 as his guide to changing his allocation, he's not a passive investor. He's a rational investor. I don't hear in these comments an endorsement of rational investing. Perhaps there's some. Perhaps he's moving in that direction. That, I think, could be said. I think it could be said that Bill Bengen is moving his mind. He's working up the courage to abandon passive investing. That's a positive spin that could be put on these words, and I think a fair spin, and I hope that that's the case, and as I said earlier, if I can do anything to help, I'll do anything I can, because having people like Bill Bengen abandon passive investing, that's just what we need to see. That's what will persuade a lot of average investors to abandon passive investing. We need him to acknowledge that the idea of not assessing, not making risk assessments is a bad one, and not changing your allocation according to what you find. Then he makes this, I think it's an incredible statement. He says, I believe those who are investing in equities now or remain invested in them are in possession of securities whose future earning power is completely unpredictable. He's saying that stock investing today is gambling, isn't he? If the future earning power is completely unpredictable, not a little bit unpredictable, completely unpredictable, isn't he saying that it's gambling to be in stocks today? Now, I almost don't know where to start. That statement is in direct conflict with statements we have read recently from people like Warren Buffett, John Bogle, Burton Malkiel. All those three people, who are three of the leading lights in the field, they're all passive investing enthusiasts. They are not rational investors. Well, Buffett is. Buffett is a rational investor. But Buffett's statement was more... Buffett sometimes slants his statements a little bit in favor of passive investing. But Buffett invests rationally. He follows rational investing. Bogle does not. Malkiel does not. Of course, there are rational elements to both Bogle and Malkiel. Bogle, there's no question. I think Bogle is 60% rational, 40% passive. But Bogle is an advocate of passive investing in a way that Buffett is not. But Buffett, the three of them, all recently put forward statements saying that investors should remain invested in equities. And if anything, they should be increasing their equity allocation. All three said that. Bill Bengen is saying the opposite. Is that not true? Bill Bengen is saying, those invested in stocks today are invested in an asset class whose future earning power is completely unpredictable. Why not just say they're essentially invested in lottery tickets? It's a shocking statement. And I'm not picking on Bill Bengen. you know, what he is saying is much in accord with what many middle-class investors are coming to conclude, that stock investing is gambling. And I don't believe it is. But a logical implication of the passive investing model, of a belief in passive investing, is that stock investing is gambling. It does follow. If you can't figure out when your allocation should be high and when it should be low, you're gambling. And passive investing says you can't figure it out. It says it's hopeless. You just have to, you can't time the market, right? If you can't time the market, you can't change your stock allocation in response to changes in prices. And if you can't change your stock allocation in response to changes in prices, stock investing is a gamble. You're going to end up being highly invested in stocks at the time a price crashes, and you're going to lose most of your life savings as a result. Passive investing cannot work in the real world. And Behnken is so close to saying that you know, he's a whisker away, but something holds him back. I think it's a residual belief in the passive investing model is holding him back, and I just hope that he makes that next step. And when he makes that next step, he's going to change his advice, because the rational approach is not to be at zero stocks today. Stocks today offer a strong long-term value proposition. Malkiel's advice and Bogle's advice is closer to the mark. But the problem with Malkiel's advice and Bogle's advice is they don't acknowledge that stocks, you know, they say stocks are a good long-term value proposition today, which is true, but they didn't acknowledge how risky stocks were a year ago and 5 years ago and 10 years ago. And if you don't do that, if you don't acknowledge that insanely high prices are dangerous, you can't, how much credibility do you have when you say stocks are a good deal at reasonable prices? You shoot your credibility. So I feel that Behnken's advice is a logical outgrowth of the passive investing mindset. But it's just shocking to me that we now have, you know, Bill Behnken's a recognized expert in the field, and John Bogle's a recognized expert, and they're giving totally conflicting advice. Doesn't that trouble anyone? They're both passive investors. They're both passive investing advocates. And they're giving contrary, totally, not slightly different advice, totally conflicting advice. Doesn't that tell us that we don't understand how investing works today? At least the passive investors don't. Shouldn't they be changing their advice? Shouldn't they be adopting a more humble attitude, acknowledging that they don't really get it yet? Because once they acknowledge they don't get it, the world is their oyster. We've got the information that they need to understand the realities. It's all out there. It's all on the internet. People like Arnott and Asness and Smithers and Russell and Schiller and Easterling and Malden, they're not keeping it secret what they've learned. They're willing to share if the passive investors are only willing to listen. So we need some humility. Then he says, we are entering, this is Bill Behnken again, we are entering a completely new world of finance, and I haven't a clue yet where it will take us. Well, oh boy. You know, it certainly is true that there are a lot of people today don't know where we're headed, but we never know where we're headed. Now, was that statement not also true 15 months ago? We didn't, you know, we weren't already in the new world. We hadn't already suffered the price crash, but certainly anyone who was familiar with the historical data knew that we would soon be entering a new world of finance. When you go to a P10 level of 44, it's a long, long, long ways down to 14. And obviously we had to return to reasonable prices. The markets would collapse if we never returned to reasonable prices. No one would ever earn a return on their stock investment forevermore if we didn't return to reasonable prices. So we had to have a price crash. And when you have a price crash, you're essentially entering the new world that Behnken's talking about. He's saying, you know, owing to changes in American consumer behavior. Well, what did he, you know, what would you expect to have happened? When you go from a P10 level of 44 down to 14, don't you expect changes in consumer behavior? When the middle class loses, you know, 2/3 of its accumulated wealth of decades, You wouldn't expect a change in consumer behavior? I sure did. He says, I am waiting to attain a better understanding of likely outcomes before I dip my toe in the water again. Well, okay. But again, how are you going to develop this better understanding? If what he means by that is he's going to study things like rational investing, valuation-informed indexing, the effect, you know, Shiller's book, Arnott's work, Arnott's research, John Walter Russell's research, if that's what he means, then God bless him. You know, he's going down the right path. And yes, it makes all the sense in the world. If you are a passive investor, if you are a confirmed passive investor, taking all your money out of stocks and saying, I'm going to take the next 6 months just learning, just, you know, going to the internet, entering search terms, learning about the flaws in this failed model, and then I'll put my money back in stocks. Well, that makes all the sense in the world. If that's what Bangen is saying, then he's got my endorsement. But I don't really get that from him, because, you know, he later on, he says, I will check out the retirement risk evaluator when I get a chance. Well, you know, thanks for bringing it to my attention. That's a polite comment, but I wouldn't call it an enthusiastic comment. He's not saying, you know, I've got to check this out right away. You know, I've had doubts about the old school, and I've been looking for a new school calculator, and I want to find out what it says. You know, he's being polite. He's saying, I'll check it out, you know, when I get around to it. Fine, but you know, I'd like to see more enthusiasm. Then he says, I may miss quite a bit of a new bull market, but I miss 2/3 of the bear market, so I can afford to be patient. Well, okay, it's a good thing. He did a good thing for his clients in missing 2/3 of the bear market, certainly. So I applaud him for that. It's better than sticking into, you know, there's that poll they took at bogleheads.org where they said, if you know, will you ever change your stock allocation? You know, even if stocks go to zero, would you stick? And they, you know, 2/3 of the board said, oh, stick, I'll go to zero. I'd rather go to zero than ever change my allocation. Well, you know, Bill Bangen is six steps ahead of that when he says, I missed 2/3 of the bear market. I bet his clients are happy. I bet his clients aren't complaining. So I don't want to be too rough on Bill Bangen. He's done a good thing in getting his clients out of stocks when they were falling, and they may have a long ways to fall yet. What I feel is missing here he hasn't yet figured out when he's going to get back in stocks, and I feel he's giving very vague answers in response to that question. And you know, there was a quote from Michael Kitsis. I'll have to paraphrase it, that I talked about in an earlier podcast, where Michael said, you know, someone asked him, an investor, I think, or was it, no, it was a journalist, but the journalist was saying a lot of people are thinking of getting out of stocks now because of this price crash. You know, what do you think? And Michael said, oh, that's not a good idea. He said, but he worded it very well. He said, unless you have a plan for how you're going to get back in, that's a bad idea. And I love the way Michael said it, because that's the key. It's okay to get out of stocks when prices are crashing, as Bill Bangen did. You'll save your clients a lot of money. But how do you know when to get back in? See, that's a question that the passive investors brought to the table. That's part of the reason why they oppose timing, because they acknowledge that there are obviously cases when getting out will save you money, you know, it will limit your losses. But if you don't know when to get back in, you're going to miss out on the gains. And I don't feel that Bangen is giving any specifics on how he's going to know when to get back in. He's just saying, well, when the crisis has passed, I'll get back in. Well, you know, la-di-da. You know, we may be back at a PE10 level. They're not going to, you know, the old saying is they don't ring a bell when the crisis has passed. They're not going to stand up and say, oh, we've solved the crisis, get back into stocks today. Stock prices can go up very quickly. And if you're waiting for the New York Times to have a headline saying happy days are here again, you might miss out on a run-up in prices from, you know, we're now at we're now at a PE10 level of 14. We might be at 28 before the New York Times runs a headline. Or we might stay. You know, we might. Here's a case of how Behnken could be hurting his clients in a very, very serious way. We don't have to have a price run up to 28. We might stay at 14 for the next 6 years, you know, with little changes. 15, 13, 14, you know, 16, 13, 14. Always coming back to somewhere in the neighborhood of 14. Well, guess what? If we stay at 14 for 6 years, stock investors will be earning a return of something around 6% real every year that that's the case. And Behnken's clients will not be earning 6% real. So Behnken's clients will be missing out. You see, at today's price level, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. I start every podcast with that message. For so long as we remain at these at these price levels, these general price levels. Behnken's clients need to know that. That's rational investing. They need to know that. They need to know, you know, as I say, if they don't understand the flaws of passive investing, he's doing the right thing, getting them out of stocks until no one should have a dollar in stocks unless they understand the ABCs of investing. And the effect of valuations on long-term returns is the ABCs. You've got to understand why passive investing cannot work before you put any money in stocks, in Rob Bennett's opinion. But I think Behnken is, he's wrong. He's not wrong if he's trying to learn how to get back into stocks. But if he's not interested in taking the next step, then I think he's wrong. But what really stuns me, it's not so much what Behnken is doing. Behnken's advice, in my mind, is just the other side of the coin of the advice that Malkiel is giving and that Bogle is giving. That you should just continue to ignore prices, you know, just pretend there's some fantasy land where passive investing works. Just, you know, proceed. Nothing has happened. The fact that you've lost 50% of your life savings, don't let it trouble you. You know, that advice is horrible, in my view. Behnken's advice is horrible from the other perspective, because Behnken, both types of advice are emotional. Bogle's just saying, I don't want to admit I was wrong. I don't want to admit I made a mistake in advocating passive investing, so I'm just going to put my fingers in my ears and pretend nothing happened. You know, just trudge forward. And Behnken is saying, I'm going to respond emotionally to what happened. I'm going to take all my money out of stocks, even though I don't have a plan for how to get back in. I personally recommend something in the middle, which is not taking all your money out of stocks, but going down to a low enough stock allocation where you will not be too emotional if we see big price drops in days to come, and then combining that with an educational effort. You have to learn how stock investing works in the real world. And once you understand, then you could actually afford to go with a fairly significant stock allocation today. The PE10 level today justifies a high stock allocation. So if you develop an understanding of how stock investing works, you can pull it off. You can have confidence. But without confidence, it won't work. And the reason I say retirement planning has become a sick joke is that Bill Behnken is a recognized expert in this field in retirement planning, and he is giving it, and John Bogle is a recognized expert in the field, and the two are giving opposite advice. And we're not talking about it. I say we should, at the very bare minimum, we should be talking about why has Behnken come to conclusions directly contradicting Bogle's conclusions and Malkiel's conclusions. What the heck is going on here? Middle-class investors deserve answers to these questions, and they need to become more insistent that the so-called experts, the quote-unquote experts, start digging deeper and start responding to these questions in a serious way. Bill Behnken is struggling, but he's, in my view, he's struggling in the not in the way that an expert should be struggling. He's doing the best he can, I'm sure, but he's handicapped by his belief in passive investing. It's impossible to make sense of investing so long as you believe in passive investing. He's struggling in the way all of his clients are struggling. He's responding emotionally. And in order to get over that, he needs to at least entertain the idea that passive investing is not where it's at, and that valuations really do affect long-term returns, and that all that research we've seen for the past 20 or 30 years showing that the efficient market theory does not stand up to scrutiny, that research is real. That's the real thing. And we need to change our retirement planning studies and our retirement planning calculators to include valuation adjustments. We need to get serious about this shift from the old school research to the new school research. The old school safe withdrawal rate research does not include adjustments for valuations. It reports the same safe withdrawal rate at all times. That's wrong. The new school research includes adjustments for valuations. There are hundreds of questions we can examine that are very interesting as to how we should go about changing our allocations, how we should go about getting back into stocks, all these sorts of things, how we should go about putting together retirement plans. But we can't get anywhere until we overcome this wall of resistance to the idea that valuations really do affect long-term returns, and that changes in stock allocations really are required when prices get to the sorts of levels they were at from 1995 through the first part of 2008. So I hope I have not been too tough on Bill Bengen. Bill Bengen was a good sport. He answered the questions. His answers are sincere. They certainly sound sincere to me. I have no reason for thinking they're not. They're almost painfully sincere in that he's, as I say, he's directly contradicting what some of the big names like Bogle and Malkiel are saying. And I admire him for that. I admire him that he put his client interest, the interest of his clients, above his fidelity to this passive investing mindset. He did break with the passive investors, and he should be applauded. But I think he's only gotten halfway there. He needs to develop a plan for, as Michael Kitsis pointed out, he needs a plan for when's he going to get back into stocks. And Michael told me that, you know, he associates obviously with lots of financial planners. Bill Bengen is just one of them. Michael told me that a lot of people he speaks to are in the process of losing confidence in passive investing. He didn't say they've lost confidence, but he said that they are beginning to question it. They're in the process. And my response to Michael was, please tell them about PassionSaving.com. Let's have a conversation about realities, not about the nonsense, not about can we discuss the failings of the passive investing model. That, of course, we can discuss them. If we're serious about, you know, helping people learn how to invest, we must discuss them. Let's have a discussion. Let's have a national debate on how stock investing really works, and, you know, let it begin with us. As the there's a hymn that says, you know, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. Let there be rational investing and let it begin with me. So, you know, I hope I wasn't too harsh on Bill. I am compelled to point out weaknesses where I see them, because that's the job. But I think Bill, you know, maybe some others will see what he has done, and maybe it will cause them to have some doubts. And maybe they will take the ball, you know, a few yards further. And maybe Bill himself will take the ball a few yards further after having had some time to think this over and become comfortable with some new ideas. So thank you, Bill Bengen, for your response. And I hope everyone will look at the words. Go to the blog and look at Bill's actual words and think it through yourself. Think it through yourself. Does this passive investing stuff really make sense? And if not, what does make sense? And make some changes. Make some changes in how you go about deciding on your stock allocation. Good luck with your investing strategies.